Good morning. The meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. And I want to congratulate all of you that are here early on a Monday morning for quorum. I'm impressed with all of you. Thank you very much for it.
We've got another thing to talk about with you.
Oh, I see. So there was sorry to make it a little bit early. I know it was a little bit of an inconvenience, especially for those of us who are from greater Minnesota, but we were anticipating an extra long meeting today, and so we wanted to be able to get that done. I do have, before we get to our first bill, Representative Keel's bill, I do just have a couple of orders of business. First of all, I do have the minutes from the February 29th meeting. Would anyone like to move the minutes? Representative Erdahl moves the minutes of the February 29th meeting. Are there any corrections, additions, changes to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. And a couple of introductions on our first official meeting of the year. We have our pages, Joseph and Matthew. Joseph and Matthew, can you each briefly introduce yourselves and so everyone knows who you are?
I'm Joseph. I'm originally from Austin. I'm moved here to St. Paul. Can you think let us know?
Matthew.
Matt Stone. I'm attending the University of Minnesota, studying political science. And I live in Northeast Minneapolis.
Great. Well, we look forward to working with you this year. And Trevor, I'm going to recognize you also. We have an intern who's working with us, getting his master's at the Humphrey School. Trevor, can you introduce yourself and tell us where you're from and what you're studying?
Yeah, my name is Trevor Clayton. I'm studying public policy at the University of Minnesota. I also got my undergrad degree at the university. I'm originally from Wisconsin, though. Go Packers.
Oh. So,
we're done now.
Sorry, I didn't know about that.
You got to screen these people.
Early morning and a Packer fan.
That's okay. Thanks, Trevor. And all of our other staff is the same as last year. Representative Carlson.
Well, I was just going to say, some of us remember Harry Mayers. You know, he was from Wisconsin, and I think he was from Green Bay or close.
I still remember
where
the
cheese
head
on the floor. That's where I was headed with, and he always got a little newspaper coverage because of that. They take a picture of him, and for those that didn't know him, he was from White Bear Lake, but a huge Packer fan.
That's true.
So Trevor, take note, if you want to wear a big cheese head wedge on your head someday here, you might be able to get in the paper. Not suggesting it, but...
Or you could just maintain dignity with yourself.
All right. We have, at this point, four bills on the agenda for today. I'm going to go with a little bit different order. I'm going to start with Representative Keel's bill, then with my bill, House File 839. These are both bills that did pass the committee last year. We're on the general register with the end of session, automatically came back to this committee, and so we are going through the formality of passing them again. Then we have Representative Garofalo's two bills. I don't see Representative Garofalo here yet, but I know there's discussion about some other potential language coming for those bills, and so we may be hearing some additional language on those which we can talk about if and when we get to that point of seeing additional language on it. But with that, let me first recognize and welcome Representative Keel back to the Committee on Ways and Means. The chair will move House File 606 to get it in front of the committee. And I understand there is an amendment, too. But Representative Keel, can you briefly talk about 606, and then I'll... move the A8 amendment. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, House File 606 is intended to achieve safety standards for abortion facilities that we expect similarly in our outpatient surgical centers. Women seeking help for abortion expect to find a safe and comforting place, and they are seeking help. Women and young girls assume that this facility has been licensed by our state, and that's the intent of this bill, is to license it.
Okay, and I'll move the A8 amendment. Can you describe the A8 amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, on page 3, it is A8, and it just deletes the appropriation for fiscal 2016.
Right, and as I understand it, we had appropriation for 2016 and 17, and this one had passed last year, and of course it didn't pass the floor, so we need to delete this. Is there any discussion to the A8 amendment? Representative Boginius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, clearly, if this bill passes, it will be appealed. There's no question about that.
Excuse me, can you talk into the mic, Representative Boginius?
If this bill passes, it will be appealed. There's no question about that. It will go to court. But I don't see any money appropriated here for the court processes. And in fact, you're cutting the money. So this is a fiscal committee. Please help us out. Why isn't there money for the court process?
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius. I would believe that do we typically plan for a court case before we've passed a bill?
Representative Wagenius.
Well, this bill actually assumes a court case because there's a constitutional severability clause here. So not all bills would necessarily have a court case, but this one, because of the controversy and because of the severability clause, obviously is ready for appeal. But there's no money for the appeal.
Representative Keel.
I believe that quite a few bills that have, if they have a constitutional amendment, they have to have a severability clause attached to them.
Representative Wagenius.
This isn't a constitutional amendment. This is a bill.
Constitutional bill.
That assumes that there will be an appeal. And common sense tells every one of us there will be appeal, too. So we have two reasons to know that there's going to be an appeal. And it seems to me that since this is a fiscal committee, we should have money in the bill for the appeal. So that's my, perhaps, Mr. Chair, that's my question for you. This is your fiscal committee. Why isn't there money for an appeal in here?
Well, look, I guess I would say two things, Representative Wagenius. First of all, of course, it is Representative Keel's bill, and this committee did pass this bill in its current form, absent the 2016 language that we just amended out last year. Beyond that, I guess I don't think that we have a policy of assuming which bills we think are likely to get a lawsuit acted on for the state and which bills we're not going to be sued on for the state. We have the severability clause in it, but we have a number of bills that come before this committee that have severability clauses. Sometimes there's a lawsuit, sometimes they're not. We, of course, fund the Attorney General's office out of this committee as well, with the assumption that the state is going to be sued a certain number of times, and with the money that we give them that they will defend the lawsuits. And so I don't know that we've ever gotten into prognosticated in advance which bills we think we're going to be sued on and which ones we aren't, so that we have somehow a separate appropriation to anticipate the lawsuit. We just fund the Attorney General's office for that. So I guess since you directed the question to me, I would say I don't know that it's appropriate for this particular bill to try to have an additional appropriation for it. Representative Wagenius.
I would just respond by commenting that everyone in this committee knows that this, if passed, would be appealed.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to add to what Representative Wagenius has said, that most people here probably know that there's a similar case right now before the U.S. Supreme Court. And so, quite obviously, this is an issue that will be in the courts one way or another. And so I think that Representative Wagenius's point is very well taken. But while I have the floor, I think I just want to also just comment on this bill. It did pass this committee last year. You know, here we are in this extremely short session. Everybody acknowledges that there are going to be a very limited number of things that we're going to be able to accomplish this year. And I'm really disappointed, not surprised, but disappointed that this bill is being put through again. You know, first of all, obviously it's an extremely controversial issue, as we see by the fact that it is in the Supreme Court, but also what Representative Keel said when she came to the table, that this is for women to find a safe and comforting place when they go to get an abortion. And I would argue pretty strenuously that in Minnesota, women do find a safe and comforting place. And there's absolutely no evidence that there's anything other than that when women are seeking an abortion. So there's also quite a bit of evidence that in places where they've passed these kinds of laws that make it more difficult for abortion providers to continue to operate, that women seeking abortions can't find a place to have an abortion that is safe and comforting. And so, in fact, they resort to inducing their own abortions and going to places where their lives and health are, in fact, put at risk. So I would say that what this bill really does is it's an attack on women's health. It's an attack on women's right to have a safe and comforting place to seek care that they have decided that they are seeking. And we should not be passing this bill again, and certainly we should not be passing it in this very short legislative session when we have so many more important and things to deal with, many of which we probably won't even get to. And yet we're playing games with this bill again that the governor vetoed it once. He would certainly veto it again, and I think that we should not be spending any more time on it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Keel, I just want to thank you for bringing forth this piece of legislation. I can't think of a more invasive procedure than when we're talking about abortions. And I think it's helpful that you're bringing this forth in providing women the knowledge that the place that they're going to has been inspected, that it's clean, that it's going to be providing safe medical procedures, but we don't know that unless they actually have to go through the process of being licensed. And we don't know what's happening unless they have to go through that process. So for someone to say that, oh, well, there's no evidence to say that they aren't safe, we don't know that. And I think this bill puts us on a great position to find out some of that, those issues and those concerns, and making sure that these places are safe and clean and a good place for women to go to. So I thank you for bringing this forward.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I strongly agree with the points that Representative Liebling made. And I guess to me, and maybe it's a question to the author, why are you just singling out this particular facility? I mean, there's other facilities as well. So, you know, we're just, you know, the American Medical Association said, and I think it's a really good point, that this is a dangerous overreach into the patient-physician relationship, because you're only looking at one particular procedure in one particular kind of clinic, and I think that's a real dangerous precedent.
So,
could you comment on that?
Representative Hornstein, before I recognize Representative Representative Keel to it's still early. Representative Keel to answer that question. Let's deal with the A8 amendment. I guess all the discussion I've heard just in a little bit here has been on the bill itself, which is fine. But I guess we technically still have the A8 amendment, which I moved in front of us, which just basically deletes the 2016 appropriation, which is really not relevant anymore since it didn't pass last year. So is there any discussion to the A8 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A8 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A8 amendment is adopted. Okay, now on to the bill as amended. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, to summarize, I mean, why wouldn't you extend this to all clinics, all types of procedures?
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, what we're looking at is the same thing we do for outpatient surgical centers. So we're looking at invasive procedures, which this is. There's no denying that this is an invasive procedure. And that's what we're looking for, is making sure that we deal with patients in the same manner we would in an outpatient clinic.
Representative Hornstein.
Well, I mean, again, I, Mr. Chair, I think it's a solution in search of a problem. I mean, we have a 99% safety record. This is one of the safest medical procedures performed in the United States. And, you know, when we have physicians talking about a dangerous overreach into the patient-physician relationship, I think that's cause for concern. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, could anybody tell me what, is there any clinics that are not licensed? I know when I go to a barber, he's licensed. When I go to other facilities, they're licensed. Can anybody tell me what facilities are not licensed?
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Detmer, the barber might be licensed, but the barber shop is not licensed. When a woman goes to an abortion clinic, she is being handled by licensed personnel. But that doesn't mean the facility needs to be licensed. And, in fact, there are a lot of outpatient centers that do, for example, colonoscopies, another very invasive procedure where the facility is not licensed. It's under the license of the licensed provider, the physician, the nurse practitioner, whoever it is that's providing the service. So there hasn't been a problem. And if you want to say that any invasive procedure needs to be in a licensed facility, you're going to be impacting lots and lots of facilities in the state that are not currently licensed.
Okay, did you want to respond to that? Okay, Representative Detmer, then Dean, then Gunther. Representative
Detmer. So other medical facilities are not licensed? Is that what we're saying? Our clinics, when I go to a clinic, they're not licensed, the facility?
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we're kind of getting far away from the fiscal aspects of the bill, which we're supposed to be kind of talking about, but for those folks that aren't on the health policy or other committees that this has gone through where we've discussed this at length, if you have had the benefit of being at those committees, you would know that, in fact, these facilities are singled out. They're singled out for not being in an environment that is licensed. For example, if you need arthroscopic knee surgery, which is very, very common, which many of us have had or had a spouse or somebody in the family have, that's at an outpatient surgical facility that is, in fact, licensed. This is an invasive surgical procedure that is at a facility that is not licensed. So how do we know what the failure rate is, what the cleanliness is, what the certifications are? In fact, we don't know, because we have decided to make this this something that we hide in facilities that are unlicensed, and that's what Representative Keel's bill is trying to do, and that's all it is trying to do. And there's a lot of rhetoric around that, but that's just the facts of the matter.
Representative Gunther.
I just was going to tell Representative Liebling the barber shop is inspected. That's a big difference.
Other discussion of the bill is amended. Representative Liebling?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Gunther, there are other kinds of regulations that do apply to these clinics, and that the fact that they're not licensed as surgical centers does not mean that they're not inspected. So they do have a lot of federal and state regulations, including clinical laboratory improvement amendments. There are things under HIPAA. There are things under OSHA. So there are really, you know, they do have to comply with certain standards. They're not just totally unregulated. And, again, there are a lot of clinics where other kinds of surgical or invasive procedures are performed that are not licensed. The other thing to note about this bill is it only applies if a clinic does 10 or more abortions. So if it does 9, are we saying then that the women who get the first 9 abortions in a clinic don't need the protection? So there's something a little different going on here. This is definitely not about safety. This is about stopping women from having abortions, and unfortunately, it won't do that. It won't do that. All it will do is make sure that women get abortions that are not safe. and it puts their lives and health at risk. And, you know, we could probably all agree that we'd like to reduce the number of abortions. And, in fact, the number of abortions has dropped considerably. I don't have the figures in front of me, but it's gone down. And that's probably a good thing. However, when a woman does decide that she wants to have an abortion, I think it's really, we shouldn't be getting in the way of her having a safe, as Representative Keel said, a safe and comforting place to have an abortion. And that's all this bill does. That's what's been shown in other states that have passed similar laws. It just means that women are not able to get to the service, and then they find alternative and much less safe and healthy ways to do it.
Representative Keel, I don't see anyone else on the list. Would you like to give a final summary or response on the bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would thank you all for hearing this again, and I would hope that we could bring this to the floor and pass it. I think it's very important that we talk about the safety. Maybe we do need to consider licensing everyone who provides any abortions. That's probably a good point. Think about my intent is to make sure that women can secure a safe medical procedure without worrying about any challenges at all. I believe one of our abortion centers even talked about air handling. We think of air handling in this facility as being very important, and certainly we want to make sure that that's the case in those facilities also. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, I appreciate you taking the time to hear this bill. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 606, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. No.
Motion prevails. House File 606 is passed and referred, as amended, is passed and referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Keel.
Thank you.
The next bill I'll just take up quickly is House File 839. I know some people have said this is my election bill for the year. I'll move House File 839. I'm pleased to have Representative Carls as my co-author. What it just says is that in certain years when the last day of February falls on a Saturday or a Sunday, the February forecast for that year can be delivered the following Tuesday. Is there any discussion on this important bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carlson.
Does that mean that it's the re-election bill for both of us?
I that's probably why you're on it, too. I haven't thought about that. All right. Well, bipartisan unity we've got.
Without party designation or with it?
In both cases. All right. See no discussion. All in favor of House File 839 being referred to the General Register, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 839 is referred to the General Register. Representative Garofalo.
Oh, I forgot.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Just to bring people up to speed, and Mr. Chairman, if I say anything that's wrong, please correct me if anything's changed since our previous conversation on this. But my understanding is that what we are going to do today is members of the committee are going to get copies of the Senate file that passed the Senate last Thursday, and we're going to review that. And then there was some new language that was shared with the majority this weekend. The copies of that will be shared with members of the committee so they can review that. And then from there, I think there's going to be some, just gives people some time to digest that, and then we're going to, maybe you want to update members of the committee on that.
Yeah, I think what we'll do is, I guess I don't know which of these two bills you want to take up first, Chair Garofalo, but I think we'll move and discuss at least one of the two bills. We've got a House file and Senate file. I think the language is identical. Then we can talk about what the Senate did, and it's my understanding there's some other potential language floating around that we may also then be able to review, and I guess we'll see if we hear anything new in terms of whether there's an agreement on some compromise language or where we are by the time we get through discussing this. And at that point, we may take it up if people are okay with it. We may recess. I guess we'll we'll see where the discussion leads us. That's my intent at this moment. And I know I had talked to Representative Carlson some about this ahead of time, too, that there are some things going on, I guess, at the leadership level in terms of other language that we're kind of waiting to see if they do get resolved here and if it's something that we can act on right away as we're discussing here, or if we perhaps need to recess and perhaps come back a little bit later. But that's what I know at this point, members. Let's go ahead, Representative Garofalo. Which of the two bills would you like to move?
Well, Mr. Chairman, let's start with the Senate file 209.
Okay, Chair Garofalo moves that Senate file 209 be referred to the General Register. Representative Garofalo, can you walk us through the bill?
Sure. And Mr. Chairman and members, just to be clear, I'll cover this version of the bill, but I also understand that there's a for Article 1, there's a different version, slightly different version the Senate passed, and then there is the language that you described as compromise language, which I believe is being disseminated right now. So I'm going to, rather than go through the language of Senate File 209, I think I'm going to wait for that, this language to be passed around, and then I'll cover my understanding of, or actually, if we have nonpartisan staff, which just came in, Ms. Hendricks can discuss the A-10 amendment that is being discussed around. And Mr. Chairman, my intent would be not to move that language right now, that we would just hold off and let people get a chance to review it and understand it, and perhaps address it a little bit later today.
All right. And I have been told that the fiscal note, there's not a fiscal note for Senate File 209, but there is a fiscal note for House File 2032, which is in the Senate File 209 packet, and they have the same effect. They're essentially identical fiscal notes. So if people have any questions about that, that's how we have the fiscal note in there. But and it's also in the 2032 packet. So Chair Garofalo, it's your preference, you're saying, to have nonpartisan fiscal staff go through the bill or the amendment, the proposed amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be wise for us to start with the amendment, and then at that point we can discuss what the Senate passed last Thursday, and that would be my suggestion, is so that people understand those versions of it. But I'm kind of looking for Representative Carlson, Representative Mahoney, if they think that's a prudent course of action, or if they would. Otherwise, we can go through Senate File 209.
Representative Mahoney.
I just don't want to mess anything up, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Representative Mahoney wants to be recognized, so Representative Mahoney.
No, I have two things. I'll address Representative Garofalo's comments in a minute, but my understanding, I was not in on the discussions over the weekend. I was doing other things. With the fiscal note, and because I haven't seen this amendment, I'm not sure the fiscal notes if they are the same or not. So I would ask, you know, fiscal staff to kind of walk through the fiscal note on whatever this amendment will do.
So,
And I think that's appropriate. Let's just talk turkey here. The original bill is not going to move. We're going to go with the amendment at some level, or we're going to have something off of these amendments. So I don't see any point to do Senate File 209 or the House file. We should just go right off of the Senate language that was passed and was just passed out.
Okay, I guess Representative Mahoney, I guess I don't know that I know that for sure. I don't know that there's any kind of agreement for sure on the A8 amendment that's been put forward here. I actually didn't hear about anything until last night when I was sitting in church and my text messages started going off. So, and I still don't know that much. But Chair Garofalo, I guess, can you respond and maybe also answer Representative Mahoney's question about the fiscal note and how it is the same or different for the amendment?
Sure. Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, members of the committee, again, there's two separate articles. There's Article 1 and Article 2. It's safe to say that there are some slight differences. We have two different baselines. We have Senate File 209 as it exists today, Article 1 and Article 2. And then we have the language that passed the Senate in Article 1. And then for Article 2, you have the amendment before you that would replace Article 2 in that bill. So I think what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to have Ms. Hendricks go through the A8 amendment that's been passed out. This is language that was shared with us. The committee can review it. I would prefer that we not take action on that right now. And then after we do that, we will review Article 1, the potential Article 1 replacement as it passed from the Senate on last Thursday. And we'll review that, and then it would be certainly your purview, Mr. Chairman, of whether to recess or not, but I think it would be wise to just have people digest that and understand it, to give people time, some time to review it. So I would defer to Ms. Hendricks right now to cover the A8 amendment.
All right, let's start with the A8 amendment. Welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means, Ms. Hendricks.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll be walking through the two amendments. As I understand it, there's one A8 amendment that is to Senate File 209. There's also, which I happen to have in front of me, the A10 amendment to House File 2032, which the texts are identical. The language is identical. So what this Article 2 does is set a cap on the UI Trust Fund based on solvency measures by the federal government. The paragraphs A, B, C, and D, kind of in highly technical language, sets a cap kind of ongoing for future years. And in essence, it means that if the balance in the trust fund on December 31st of any calendar year is above the average high cost multiple of 1, then future taxes will be reduced by the difference between the balance in the trust fund and that average high cost multiple. The average high cost multiple is the solvency level that the federal government uses. If the average high cost multiple is 1, it means the federal government's definition of that is that the UA trust fund has enough money in it to pay out for 1 year, kind of based on the worst 3 years of a payout that the state has experienced. So that is the solvency level that will be used in the future. So that's paragraph A. It excludes some of the employers, the high or the maximum experience rated employers, those employers that see a lot of layoffs. Under paragraph B, it describes what the average high cost multiple is. Under paragraph C, it's more kind of technical language to whom it does apply, so not in maximum experience rating industries. Under paragraph D, it apply to which taxes is applied for the calendar year. And then paragraph E, actually, the bill is also, or the amendment would make the bill retroactive to December 31st, 2015. That means that Deed will look on December 31st, 2015, and look at the trust fund balance, which was about $1.65 billion. It would also look at the average high-cost multiple of 1, but rather than of 2015, they look back to 2012, and that number is, I think, $1.4 billion, about. And then look at the difference between those two numbers, which is $258 million. And then that $258 million would be applied as tax credits to taxes paid in 2016 and the first two quarters of 2017. So employers would see a tax credit or a tax reduction for the second two quarters of 2016. There's a little bit of a delay in all calculating all of this and getting this all into the system. So, and then if employers are not able to take advantage of that tax credits in the last two quarters, they still have the first two quarters of 2017 to take advantage of those. So that would probably lead to the full amount of $258 million being paid out in tax reductions or paid out applied to taxes paid. So that would reduce the level in the trust fund by $258 million, but spread out over four quarters.
Any questions for Ms. Hendricks? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Hendricks, I'm kind of new at this issue. So, you know, and as you're talking, I'm sort of trying to understand what's the real world impact of this. Can you just sort of explain it to us in sort of layman's language, like what's the non-technical explanation? What am I going to say to my constituents about what we're doing with the unemployment trust fund? What's the impact of it?
Ms. Hendricks.
Representative Liebling and members of the committee, I'll do my best describe. I think the UI Trust Fund is there to pay out benefits for laid-off workers. I think the solvency level is a policy question or a policy debate of what is a good solvency level for the UI Trust Fund. The federal government uses this technical and average high-cost multiple, and when it's at one, they look back at the 3 years of kind of worst recession and highest payouts that the state has experienced, and in relation to the current economy of the state, and say that is a good level to be at. So that is what the federal government would say. This reduction would bring the trust fund likely somewhat below that average high cost multiple of one. Currently, it's kind of hovering around that. So what currently is in the trust fund is very close or almost is an average high cost multiple of one. Through this tax reduction, it'll fall below that somewhat. As I know, the deed estimates, without anything happening to the UI Trust Fund, that the balance would be about $1.8 billion at the end of this year, and that would put it quite a bit above, somewhat above the average high cost multiple of one. So this reduction would, in fact, take it below it. Whether that is, I think, good policy is not, I think,
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Sharon. Thank you. That helps, but kind of my follow-up to that is you spent some time talking about this effective date and retroactive date. And can you give us a little more about what that means?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Liebling, I speak legislators, so I will try to summarize it. So in paragraph E, the relevant part, the 2012 information, what that is doing is just using a different reference point to determine the amount of the credit. So there was a mechanism in the original bill that determined what the credit was. This is changing the mechanism to determine what the amount is, not its applicability. So the old way was $272 million. Calculating it this way was $258 million. That's the only mechanism, that's the part that changed. And what that $258 million, that's the amount that's determined for the amount of the reduction in unemployment insurance premiums for 2016, or in some certain cases to carry it over into 2017.
Okay. Thank you.
I have Representative Anderson and Albright. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Garofalo, I think you just explained my question that I had, because we're basing it off of 2012, which is 1.4. versus 2015, which is 1.6, we're basically giving less money back to the employers that paid into the unemployment insurance pool. Is that correct?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, that is correct, from 272 to 258. But again, it's not the 1.6 or the 1.4 that's the relevant number. It's the difference that's being calculated. So, for example, the difference before was 272. Now the difference is 258. So that's the relevant number.
Representative Albright and Mahoney.
To the author, I note on line 1.25 of the amendment that you're including 268.051. It was not in the original 209. I'm just curious why that was included now.
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Albright, first of all, I want to be clear. I'm not moving this language. This is not my language. I'm bringing it forward so members of the committee can understand that. Number two, with regards to why that was included, I would not, because it's not my amendment, you would have to ask those for why they included it.
Can you talk, Chair Garofalo, at all about the effect of it? Or Ms. Hendricks?
Mr. Chair, can the question please be repeated? Which lines exactly?
Representative Albright.
This would pertain to on the amendment line 1.25. And I'm just curious, as I read the language, and Representative McNamara is looking at it as well, but it looks like it includes or pertains to employers engaged in specific industries, particularly as I would attribute this bill to be about sand, gravel, or limestone mining. Is that a specific iteration that we excluded? I understand that this language is probably not going to be applicable to law, but I'm just curious why it was included in the amendment.
Ms. Hendricks?
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, I would have to look into this a little further to give you an answer.
It's a nuance without probably an answer, but I was just curious as I read the amendment.
All right. Representative Mahoney.
I've got a series of questions. If this is not the chief author's amendment, whose amendment is it, Mr. Chair or Mr. Chair?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, and I want to be careful that I'm not stepping on anybody here, but I think...
Oh, why should you bother today?
It's a reasonable question, Representative Mahoney. I think on Friday on public television, Senator Bach suggested that he was going to be offering compromise language to Speaker Dowd. Also, there have been members of the House and Senate DFL involved in these discussions who have shared this language, but I think it would be better if you, rather than hearing it from me, that you speak with members of your caucus about who is originating it, or we can talk offline. I would be sharing information that I was told, and I don't, if that information is inaccurate, I would not want to cause any problems. So,
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I can hear that and understand it. The sad part is that this became such a political football that it had to go into corner offices and be discussed to come to compromise out of the public eye with a lack of transparency, and that's sad for Minnesota that we're coming to that and coming to that. I think there was an editorial about partisan bickering that I read with some amusement. I've got two issues here, and it's when this was done, when a similar bill, not identical in any way, shape, or form, was done 3 years ago, one of the members of this committee actually was pretty adamant that it was a reduction. It's not a rebate. It's not a tax cut. It's a reduction in fees paid in the future years. Is that correct, Representative Garofalo?
Chair Garofalo.
That it is a reduction. It is not a rebate. It is not a tax cut. It is a reduction in future payments.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, what this bill does is it reduces the amount of future revenue that would go into the UI Trust Fund based off of, number one, the calculation you see in subdivision E, and then second of all, if the economy continues to grow and we have a surplus above a certain level, it would automatically provide those reductions in revenue and insurance premiums going forward after that. So that's what it would do. It is categorized, so that's, I think that answers your question.
So I'm going to take that as pretty much a yes, but maybe not. One of the concerns, because we heard this bill Thursday prior to session, archaic rule that we typically have. We can vote. I didn't realize this after 20 years that we could vote on a bill and pass it while we're in the interim. But that's in the rules, so that's good. I'm glad we got rules here. But one of the things that was said in that particular committee, and I want everyone on this committee, I want the author of the bill, I want leadership to understand that the department came down and was pretty clear that they foresee problems getting the computers lined up with this, and that they are, the unspoken wording was that they were concerned that they would get the malarkey kicked out of them because they did not get their computers lined up fast enough. They were pretty clear that, and I know we have a computer person around here that will probably refute me, but for all members, if you get complaints from your businesses, understand that we're putting this into effect pretty quickly. When it was done 3 years ago, there was a pretty long lead time, almost a year. This one is a 3 month, 6 month, and 9 month lead time. So you're warned, and I've asked the commissioner to write a letter to that particular effect that everyone gets, that they may or may not be able to get their computers lined up with this rate reduction in time. So just everyone needs to understand, don't pick on the department, pick on ourselves, because we don't take into account what we're asking our staff to do, whether it's staff at the legislature or staff at one of the departments.
Representative Garofalo, do you want to make any response to that?
Mr. Chairman, this language that's before you is constructed in a way that obviously we don't prescribe when the department would have to put out an RFP for changing the code in their systems, but we want to get it out the door as soon as possible. And so, as always, the executive branch is going to have some discretion in that area, but it is set up so that it allows the opportunity to get that money out as soon as possible. In the event that they're not able to accomplish that in 2016, it would carry forward to 2017.
Okay,
as I understand the language.
I represent Carlson, then Loon. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm interested in what the process is going to be here this morning. You indicated early in the meeting that we would take a walk through the bill, and now the amendment is before us. So is your intent to still recess? Because I think we'd like to visit some about the amendment, if we could have that opportunity before we vote on the amendment and ultimately the bill. The other question I have, will there be an opportunity, and no one has contacted me if about testifying, they may have you, but will there be an opportunity for the impacted parties and or the department to comment about the amendment?
Well, first of all, to your first question, Representative Carlson, yes, it's my intention to still recess before we act on this particular amendment, if in fact we act on it at all. We may review some of the other legislation, the file that passed the Senate, the House and Senate file we have in our possession. But because this looked like it might be something that might be coming forward as a potential compromise, we thought that we ought to start by reviewing this. In terms of testimony, I have not had anyone contact me to testify about either of the bills that are on the calendar for the day here. Certainly, if someone wants to come forward and testify about the amendment, we can see if we have time to do that. But no one came forward to say they wanted to testify about the rest of the agenda, which is pretty much the same item.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I ask that only because, this is a change, and I don't know if anyone would be interested in doing that or not. They will probably let you know if they are. But your comment there, when you say we possibly may vote on this, if at all. So I'm not sure. It kind of goes back to the earlier discussion, the amendment, where it comes from, who's agreed to it. I'm not sure what the status of that is. Maybe that, as we proceed here, we'll find out. But I don't know how broad the agreement may or may not be with your comment then, if in fact this is the agreement.
Representative Carlson, I'm honestly telling you all I know. I don't know anything more about whether this is a item of language that's been agreed upon. Chair Garofalo talked about where he understood it came from. And I guess going back to your other comment, I mean, you know, normally we did have House File 209 and or excuse me, Senate File 209 and House File 2032 on the schedule. So if there is someone that wanted to testify on this subject, you know, they haven't talked to us.
Yeah,
but I guess it's my intention to recess before we would take action on this. But I wanted to, since we had the time, take a chance to walk through it, give people a chance to ask questions, make sure everyone was fully informed on it. And,
yeah, and Mr. Chairman, it sounds like you and I are in the same situation then in terms of how this is developing and ongoing and who may or may not have agreed at this point. So thank you.
Yep. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it was more just along the lines of whether or not there was someone from the department here to respond to any of the points raised by Representative Mahoney or others on this provision. But if we're going to come back to this, maybe that could wait for another time.
All right. Otherwise, if you have questions, you can certainly ask them now. You're the last person on my list.
Well...
otherwise, Chair Garofalo, do you want to, if there are no other questions on the A8 amendment, you had talked about speaking about what the Senate did and the other bills we have before us. Would you like to do that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and just to be clear with members of the committee, I think the entire reason why we're not taking, the main reason why we're not taking action on this amendment right now is it's a Monday morning, members are driving in from the weekend. It was clear that not everybody had a chance to review the language. And we wanted just to make sure that we didn't hurry up and take action or jam something down people's throats without them having a chance to review it. So that was the entire purpose of that. So, Mr. Chairman, at this point, I believe we have copies right now, so we'll pass this out. This is the Senate version. This is the version of the extension of unemployment benefits that passed the Senate on Thursday. And we'll take a minute here to allow the language. To allow the language to be passed out, and then Ms. Hendricks can cover. I guess I don't think there's any. Just cover what the provision does and cover the fiscal note. And Bob, we'll just wait for those to get passed out, though. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Senate File 1006 is being passed out.
Thank you.
Ms. Hendricks, are you ready to take us through Senate File 1006?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll do my best.
All right, thank you.
Yes. So in front of you, you have Senate File 1006. It has only one article, and it's that relates to the extended unemployment benefits for laid-off minors, as well as a secondary group of workers who work for an employer providing goods or services to an iron mining industry employer. The language is very similar to Representative Garofalo's proposal or bill in Senate File 209 or House File 2032. There's some technical differences between eligibility. So if you look on page two, all the way at the bottom, the eligibility for federal trade readjustment allowance benefits. In the Senate File 209, House File 2032, that refers there to trade. Trade Adjustment Assistance, TAA. That is kind of the umbrella program that the federal government has for laid-off workers due to global trade. So this, the Senate version, makes it very specific to trade readjustment allowance benefits, which are the monetary benefits that they're similar, very similar to unemployment benefits that these laid-off workers might receive. In terms of the cost, and that, I think, is the most important difference. The effectiveness date, I should point out, is also different in that this one is retroactive to August 31st, 2015, whereas the Senate File 209, House File 2032, the House proposals are effective the day after enactment. In terms of the cost estimates, there's no difference between these two versions, the Senate and the House. So the fiscal note for Senate File 1006 has a cost estimate for that first group, the laid-off minors, excluding those that are eligible for federal benefits under the TRA, of about $6.6 million to the UI Trust Fund. The secondary group, those working in employers that are affected by these layoffs, that is estimated to be about 22.9, or almost 23 million, for a total of cost of the UI Trust Fund of 29.6 million. That is exactly the same amount of estimated cost under the House proposal. So these, some of these technical changes in definitions, D does not estimate that to be of such a, have such an impact that they would change their estimates.
Are there any questions for Ms. Hendricks on Senate File 1006? All right, seeing no questions. Chair Garofalo, any comments on Senate File 1006, or would you like to walk through one of the other two bills that are on the calendar for the day?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think at this point Ms. Hendricks did a good job of covering those small differences. The important thing is, from a fiscal perspective, you have the same fiscal note. So I think at this point, unless there's any additional conversation, I think it would be wise for members to kind of take some time to review this language, recess the committee, allow members to talk, and then at your discretion come back to take action at some point in the future. The language that we're going to take up is obviously going to be, it's going to depend upon the conversations that take place, but from our perspective, you're looking at the potential of an Article 1 bill that passed the Senate last week with only three no votes, and then the language for Article 2 that you saw in the amendment there that was shared with us this weekend. That would be the potential. But
well, as long as we're here, you know, I do want and plan to recess, like I had mentioned, to give people a chance to talk about the amendment that's come forward and all this, since that's kind of new for people. But as long as we're here, I think I do want to make sure that we've had a chance to have everything we could reviewed before we take a break. And so I guess, Representative Garofalo, I'm going to have ask you to walk through either Senate File 209 or House File 2032, whichever, they're the same, whichever you wish. I see Representative Garofalo's engaged in a conversation with someone, but I would, Representative Garofalo, like you to walk through the two bills that we had on the calendar for today, just so that everyone has had an opportunity to hear everything that is before us, ask any questions they might like, because when we finally do recess, then come back, I guess I don't know how much time we'll necessarily have to act at that point, and I don't want to be bogged down asking questions and having discussion that we otherwise could have had right now. So if you could, Representative Garofalo, please walk us through the other bills we had on the agenda for the day.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we'll Senate File 209 and the House file have the same language, but I'll work off of Senate File 209. Article 1, this is the extension of unemployment benefits that we referred to earlier. In the fiscal note that was referenced, those cover subdivisions 1 through 6. Subdivision 7 is a legislative findings that talks about the importance of a diversified mineral economy in the state of Minnesota, as well as the importance of a trained and educated workforce in the area of the mining industry. And that those legislative findings complete the subdivision 7. Article 2 is the the credit, the reduction in unemployment insurance premiums that are in the bill. Again, it uses the average high cost multiplier as a baseline, and at the point that we get to 104% of that, 1.04, then the credit is triggered and allows a reduction in future insurance premiums for those years. The reason why we chose 1.04, why there's agreement on that, is that in the event that we had a UI trust fund surplus of, let's say, 1.009, that would be a negligible amount, and it actually would result in additional cost to administer the system, to administer the rebate, as opposed to just using, leaving it in the status quo. So we didn't want to, basically we wanted that surplus to be substantive enough to relevant, to make it relevant to issue a credit to those who are paying it. Furthermore, under Section 2, this is where you get into the issuance of the current credit. The for reasons that are in-depth, if people want me to address, I'm happy to talk about, but the current average high-cost multiplier, the factors that are used to calculate that are very, very high. That's why we have such a robust surplus right now. What is happening with this is that, again, as you saw in the amendment, there is a credit. We determine a credit amount based off of 2015 calculations and issue that credit in 2016 to employers in the form of reduced insurance premiums into the trust fund. In the event that the Department of Employment and Economic Development would be unable to administer the or get those credits out in time on the administration of it, then those credits would flow over into 2017 for those remaining credits. But again, some employers, it's expected that at least something could happen this year with regards to those provisions. It's important to cover for members, just to be clear, this is the UI trust fund. There is no general fund impact whatsoever. This does not compete with any other government programs in terms of local government aid, education, environment, or general fund spending. The exclusive revenue source for this is the employers of the state of Minnesota pay into this trust fund. In the event that someone is unemployed, the benefits that are paid out come directly out of this trust fund. The amount in the fund right now is near record levels for the state of Minnesota. In the past, we have passed legislation on a bipartisan basis to reduce future revenues into that fund, and we've done that when the trust fund was at a far lower level than it is right now. And so based off of the legislative record, based off of the history of this fund, its uses, this is just a sound way to move hundreds of millions of dollars from the government to the private sector to allow for the expansion and job creation in our state. And again, just to emphasize, there is no general fund impact. The only people who are benefiting from this are the employers who pay for it. And that's as cut and dry as I can try to make it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, questions. I have Representative Albright. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this goes back to the question I asked earlier, and I Mr. Sullivan actually elaborated for me on the question, but then I'm wondering if Mr. Sullivan would help us all discern the meaning of that plus how to read the sentence that starts on line 3.19 of 209 and completes on 3.23 as he explained it to me, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, the language that you initially had a question about, you noted that the drafting is different between the A8 amendment and the original language. So in the A8 on line 1.25, you see this, the language refers to section 268.051, and the language in the bill does not. But these are two different ways of drafting the same thing. Typically, when we refer to a subdivision within a section as drafters, and we're already within that section, we don't reference the section number. So although the language is different, the effect is the same. And then in the unofficial engrossment for House File 209, the sentence you're referring to is on lines 3.19 through 3.23. And as I read, or as I interpret that sentence, basically says the tax reduction for any tax-paying employer is going to be equivalent to the amount that they paid in, the percentage they paid in of the total surplus. So if I'm an employer and my contributions to the surplus were 10%, the tax reduction that I receive as that employer would be 10% of the total reduction distributed to all employers. And I believe that's correct. I'd look to Ms. Hendricks to see if I've misinterpreted that.
Thank you. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, I have Representatives Druskowski, Hillstrom, Carlson, and McNamara. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Garofalo, you mentioned, and I want to bring some clarity here, you mentioned that it would move money from the government to the private sector. Technically, doesn't it instead, though, impede the government from taking too much money from the private sector rather than actually a transfer of money from government to the private sector? Don't we just say, government, slow down your vacuuming of dollars from these poor, struggling businesses? Isn't that what we do here?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Druskowski, maybe. It does two things. First of all, with regards to the average high-cost multiplier, this ensures that this will automatically take place in the future so that we don't have to address this on a case-by-case, annual-by-annual basis. I don't know if I would characterize it the way you did, Representative Druskowski, but certainly going forward, this would be something that would automatically issue these credits, issue these reductions in insurance premiums so they take place automatically. That's the first part of it. The second part of it is the credit that would go out in 2016, and if they're unable to get the technical aspects of it done, it would be early 2017. That would certainly result in more working capital being available in the private sector. But your categorization of it is one that in the proper venue I may respond to as yes, but not today.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sounds like yes, Representative Garofalo. Thank you. The other question I had is it sounds like we're at an all-time high for the unemployment fund right now, or the projection at the end of the year is projected to be at maybe a new all-time high above that currently all-time high. Can you characterize for us what is that high-cost multiple that would, as we're looking at the high-cost multiple number here of 1.0 or 1.04, in contrast to that, what would the end of the year balance be represented in terms of that number?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Druskowski, so it's important to understand that the trust funds, our projections, are based off of economic activity going forward. As Ms. Hendricks mentioned, the current estimate is that we're at a balance of $1.8 billion with the credit being issued of either 258 or 272, assuming all other factors remain the same. That would put you at about $1.55 billion would be the balance of the fund. But again, that's entirely dependent upon the economy. And so at the end of this year, the current calculation for 1.0 is $1.6 billion. So in the event that we went above 1.6, if the economic activity grew and we went above 1.6 billion, 4% above 1.6 billion, then you would have a sort of a second credit mechanism that would automatically go into effect.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, I have a couple of questions about this bill actually assumes that we're going to continue to have growth and we're going to continue to have surpluses in the unemployment benefit fund. So my question is, what is the mechanism if you start to have deficits to actually recoup or continue to collect enough money to actually pay out benefits in the event of a serious recession or depression?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, under current law, in the event that there's a projected deficit or a projected deficiency, there's an automatic assessment that takes place to recoup those funds to keep us out of deficit. We make no changes to those provisions in this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I'm looking on page 4 of the first unofficial engrossment, I think, of House of Senate File 209. So my question is, it says that this section does not apply to employers that are at the maximum experience rating for calendar year 2015, nor high experience rating industry employers under Minnesota Statute 268.051, subdivision 5, paragraph B. Can you just, in real live language, tell the people of Minnesota who actually isn't eligible for this?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, there's a small number of employers who are currently subsidized through the system. Their costs are socialized. Their experience rating achieves a maximum rating. So even though they're paying the max insurance premium for their unemployment insurance because of their previous experience and the number of layoffs, the cost is actually being picked up by others. And so the intent of this language is so that those who are actually currently being subsidized in the current system do not benefit from the provisions of the rebate. And I want to be very clear, it does not apply to every single employer who has some level of socialization in the system. We're saying those who are at the maximum experience rating, that doesn't apply to them.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is there a list somewhere that we can get of who those are, or how do we find out who is in and who is... So if someone wants to know if they're going to get this rebate, how do they find out if they don't meet this qualification? You only get the
maximum. Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, Tim Mahoney's number is 651... No, no. No, I think for employers, the classic question would be, for those individuals, employers, they should know whether they're at the maximum experience rating or not. If they're at the maximum experience rating, they do not qualify. That would be the best avenue. But in terms of whether that information is public, which employers are at a maximum experience rating or not, I don't think that's public data.
I would suspect Representative Hillstrom, like other tax information, something like that would not be public.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just being asked to vote eventually on a proposal that I don't know who's in and who's out of. I think that that's quite an interesting tack to take legislatively.
Well, Representative Hillstrom, I don't know that we could legally name all the people that fit in one category or another, just like we couldn't legally name all the individuals that were at one tax level and our income tax level or another. I suppose, I don't know, Representative Garofalo, if there's a way to characterize any of the people who are in this category. People have had frequent layoffs because of their type of business, I guess. Maybe I'll just recognize, unless you have any other questions, Representative Hillstrom, let me just go on through the list here. People may have other comments on it. Representative Carlson, then McNamara, Mahoney, Hamilton. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, you know, my concern is that we make sure that this fund is solid and that the reserve is adequate. We do know that we're going through an economic growth period, and even though it's a little bit slower, as we know from sitting on the Council of Economic Advisors, we're still as a state growing, but not as rapidly as we were with the November forecast. That's been adjusted some, but at any rate, there's always, even in the best of times, going to be a certain level of uncertainty, and therefore I think we have to make sure that this fund has got an adequate reserve. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, you indicated you had looked at the history of the fund, and I was sitting here after you said that trying to remember some of the issues we've had through the years, and there have been problems historically that have surfaced, in fact, where we had to at some time in the past get a loan from the federal government and then we had to repay it. So there have been times in our history when due to high unemployment and so on where we have had some difficult periods. And so Representative Garofalo, when you say you look at the history, how far back did you go? And did you go back far enough to see the period that I'm talking about where we did have to access federal loans? And I do get a little bit vague. You know, Martin Sabo was on TV 23 terms. I'm up for my 23rd. So sometimes when things happen, get a little bit vague in my memory. He actually ran for 23, so I'm going for number 23.
Is this an announcement of some kind, Representative?
No, I've already announced I'm going for number 23.
All right.
But what I was trying to say is that sometimes when something happens, it's a little bit vague when you're here long enough. And that's why I'm asking if Representative Garofalo, when he says he looked at the history of the fund or had somebody look at it for him, what were the circumstances or when did we encounter some of those difficulties where we had to get a federal loan and then have a special tax, if I recall, on employers to repay the federal loan. And that's what happens when the reserve gets too low, is my point, and that's potentially a negative for employers as well.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, as you know, at some point in the past, we changed our laws so that there was an an automatic blink on of that assessment to make sure that the fund stayed solvent. I don't remember what year that change was made, but what I'm looking at is the 2001 recession after the 9/11 attacks, and then the housing crisis in 2008. Most recently, when we did need to borrow money from the federal government, that was offered to us interest-free, and there was no cost in interest. So the replenishment of the trust fund, you're 100% right, that is covered by exclusively 100% assessments of employers into that fund. With regards to right now, my understanding is that currently, we are, because of our strong fiscal situation, we are in a position where we could once again, you know, in the event that we had an unforeseen economic calamity that blew through the entire $1.6 billion of the trust fund, and we had assessments that did not cover it, we would be able to borrow money from the federal government interest-free to cover that, just as we did in 2008.
Yeah.
But I don't think those are very likely. In fact, I'd be highly unlikely to take place. But again, the important thing is those employers that are receiving a rebate and a reduction in insurance premiums, in the event that the economy does go up, that money is 100% replenished by the people who paid into the fund. There's no general fund impact.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm aware of the blink on, and if you do have to take out a loan from the federal government, it is interest-free. I mean, that's a good thing, but you still have to pay back the principal. And then that requires, if that were to happen, a special assessment. And so as we move forward, I would want to know that we are going to be on good, solid footing. As I said earlier, without knowing if there were something that were was going to happen that we don't anticipate, and make sure that the unemployment fund is going to be adequate. So maybe we'll find that out in the course of the morning. Thank you.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe to Representative Hillstrom's point, she was wondering what kind of people wouldn't qualify, require, or won't get to share in the potential future reduction in payments. Specifically in law, we also include those people that go into certain businesses are assumed to be maximum employers, and this bill includes that. And those are people that are in residential, commercial, industrial, construction, including general contractors, sand, gravel, limestone mining, manufacturing of concrete products or asphalt, road builders, repair, resurfacing, include bridge, tunnel, residential, commercial, driveway, parking lots. So if you're wondering, those business industries traditionally may have people that pay the maximum rate. And then if, and that's listed in statute, those industries are, and there's other ones that certainly could fall into that, a manufacturing business that had a significant downturn. So that's some of you are wondering who wouldn't qualify. Those industries represent some of those that do pay the maximum. Representative Groffalo, I have a question. It pertains to those people that pay the maximum. In your original bill on line 3.29, it says it does not apply to employers that are at the maximum experience rate. And then the amendment changed the word are to were. The amendment on 1.23 says employers that were at the maximum experience rate. In current law, we have a program that allows you get your rating on the 15th of December of a calendar year, and that's the rating for the following year. We allow employers 120 days to voluntarily make payments that are at 125% of the benefits assessed to them. They have to pay a 25% surcharge. They can buy their rate down. It looks like your amendment may, I don't know if it was accidental or how that word got changed, and I don't know if somebody from DUI is here is to answer who suggested that change or why that was changed, but we should have a discussion that philosophically takes away a number of people in 2010 and 2011 were historically not at the maximum rate and had high unemployment within their company, and then they unfortunately had huge layoffs and have paid the maximum, and there's a 4-year look back, or it takes you 4 years to knock your rate down.
some of these may be in the very last year of that rate knockdown, and it may make sense for them to voluntarily pay down to share. It's a pretty technical small thing, but Representative Garofalo, I think that we should think about that we should leave that in place. That would require that you would need to wait until April 30th. I believe it's 120 days after the first of the year they have to buy down. But many folks are now evaluating if they're growing this year and have more work in the coming year, whether or not they want to buy down. I'm getting kind of inside baseball, but it's how you divide up this money. But it looks like in the original bill you allowed them to buy down, and you might not in the amendment.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, if you wish, I can defer to the department on that matter. But my understanding of the program was the were and the at were the same. But in light of what you just said with regards to the provision for the 120-day buyback, there may be a limited number of employers who would determine that paying the extra assessment to, for lack of a better word, buy themselves down out of the maximum experience rating would be a smaller amount than the benefit they would get from the reduction in premiums. I'm thinking that would be pretty small. I'm trying to do the math in my head, but I don't think there'd be many employers who would make that choice. That being said, if it's something that going forward we're going to see, if it's going to take a couple of years for someone to lose their maximum experience rating, and we anticipate there's going to be a couple of years of credits, they may make that determination. But Representative McNamara, I think it would be wise for me to defer to the department and get their views on that if the chair wishes to.
Representative McNamara.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Garofalo, if the right person to answer it's not here, I certainly understand that. But it would be my hope that we would follow the process that allows them that 120 days to lower it. And I don't know if the right person that knows the answer of why that word got changed or not. They may have intentionally not thought about what I thought about, and now they want to clarify they don't want to do the extra paperwork. But it's pretty important if you're in a group that happens to be just over the maximum and you would have a chance to share. I think it's important that you would have that opportunity.
Is there someone from the department here that can speak to that question? Hello, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Can you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kim Babine from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I'm the Director of Policy there. Mr. Chair, members, to that point, the reason that the amendment on line 1.23 says that the subdivision does not apply to employers that were at the maximum rating for the year as opposed to the unofficial engrossment for Senate File 209 that has the R is because the change was made so that it works for the look back to 2012, that retroactivity piece, so that when we do the look back to 2012, then they are, we look at folks who were at the experience rating in 2012, at the max experience rating in 2012, which would, in our estimation, and we can do some more looking if it's necessary, but the that would work moving forward as well, because you'll be looking at the look for each year. The snapshot will happen at the end of each year, December 31st, and so if they were at the maximum experience for that year, then it should theoretically still work.
Representative McNamara.
So, boy, you just confused me. So you're going to use the experience mod that they were given on December 15th of 2012?
Ms. Devine?
Mr. Chair, members, no. It's the experience rating that they had for the year in which... I'm sorry, maybe I'm misunderstanding your question. So if they were at the maximum experience rating in 2012, then when we look back for this credit, then if they were at that experience, the max experience rating in 2012, then it wouldn't apply to them. Am I misunderstanding your question, Mr. Chair?
Representative McNamara?
I'm going to try again.
Okay.
I'm assuming that the experience mod you're giving on, given on, that you, a company was given on December 15, 2015, 3 months ago, is the experience mod that they, that's the mod they modify for 120 days after the first year to change their rate. The look back to 2012 is different. Do you understand? The original, I think, allowed the provision to buy it down. But you can only buy it down for 120 days after you get the rate. It would be the rate from December 15th, 2015, not of 2012. I mean, otherwise, are you? What are you doing with all the employers that didn't have a rate? Is they're all going to fall into that category? That's that catch-all? I don't think we're talking the same thing. I think we're talking something different.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think I mispronounced your name. Ms. Babine, is it?
Babine.
Babine. Okay. All right. Do you want to respond to that, or Representative Garofalo?
Yeah, just Representative McNamara. The 2012 experience rating is not relevant to the conversation.
That's my understanding. All I want to know is, and somebody, I know we're going to recess and come back. Mm-hmm. I want to know why the R was changed to were, mm-hmm. and I like the word R because I think they should be given a chance. And if the agency was trying to save some paperwork and not having to wait until those people that wanted to change get the change, I don't support that idea. And that's where I'm coming from. Thank you, Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Babine.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, happy to clarify that for you and before you take action.
All right. Representative Mahoney.
Just to clarify a number of things. This last recession, the housing crisis and the bank failures, which precipitated the recession that we went into, and brought forth the what we call TARP, is the only reason that we did not pay interest on the unemployment insurance. Saved our industries in the state of Minnesota and the country millions and millions of dollars, because I'm not sure, but I think almost every state borrowed upwards of $1 billion from the federal UI trust and were not required to pay interest on it. But in every other instance, we are required to pay interest when we borrow from the federal UI trust. The bill that's before us, 209, one of my concerns is that it, with the almost $500 million reduction in the UI account, brings us to within $100 million of kicking in the rate increase for our employers. And so we would go from $31 per employee today to $62, probably at least a full quarter ahead of where we would if we didn't do this. And if we didn't do this, we're likely to get two quarters into a recession before we increase the tax on businesses. 209, because there's no real cushion, because the average daily high cost multiplier, whatever the hell they're calling it, is the trigger where we start looking at how we're going to require businesses to pay more for unemployment insurance. The more we take out of that cushion, the sooner they pay. The sooner they pay in a economic downturn, the harder it is for their companies to have the capital to move around and be flexible in those particular instances. And that's really one of the things that companies are worried about, not being able to be flexible when they have an economic downturn. So I would say that this bill is really a bill set up to require companies in their hardest of times to actually put more money into the UI fund. And then for us, it really sets it up for us to start paying interest on that borrowing much sooner to the federal government. And having said that, I can't imagine how I could support either version of 209. I find the amendment at first read, the 08 or A8 amendment, a much more viable solution to this particular issue, although I still have some concerns with it. I'm grateful that, again, as I said earlier, that I didn't like the way that it was brought forth in a corner office someplace without public input to the A8 amendment. That's unfortunate. We shouldn't be doing that. We should have these discussions in full, fair, open committees. But it is what we have to deal with. And I think the A8, when we come back, we should really move quickly on that so that we can get this off the table. We have much more important things to work on this year than a tax cut or a credit that goes to, I think 75% of it goes to the 6% of the companies in the state. I'll bring the numbers up on the floor, so I'll have a bigger audience. I always like a bigger audience. But those are pretty devastating numbers when you realize what we're doing here. But members, I think the 209 is not a, it may be a passable bill, but I don't think it's a bill that can get into law. So I won't call for the recess, but I would say that we should go back to our respective corners to take a look at the A8, get some advice on it, see if we all like it, see if we can all live with it, and then come back and take up the A8 amendment.
Well, at this point, I have Representative Hamilton on the list, and that's the last person I have on the list, so unless there's some other discussion, we'll probably be recessing at that point. Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last week, I was in the parking ramp with a couple members from the Iron Range delegation, and we must provide relief for these workers. They're real people with real hardships. When one of us are hurting, we're all hurting. And Mr. Chairman, I'm looking for some guidance. As I'm listening to the debate, it's my impression that Article 1, there's an agreement that the questions or concerns are around Article 2. And my ask is, when we come back from the debate, if that we could have information, clarification, and more certainty on the details as it pertains to the A8 amendment, it would be greatly appreciated. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any other questions, discussion? Representative Carlson.
Yeah. During the recess, I'd like to briefly meet with the Democrats in room 272.
All right, and let's tentatively plan on Republicans meeting in 454 or 300 North. Okay, and let's plan on recessing for a half hour till 11 o'clock. Seeing no further discussion, we are in recess until 11 o'clock. Members, we're going to reconvene the meeting now at 11:17. Representative Garofalo moves Senate File 209. And then, Representative Garofalo, I understand you're moving the A8 amendment to Senate File 209. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. This is the language that we discussed before the recess.
All right. Okay, discussion to the A8 amendment.
Sure. And McNamara?
See no discussion? I don't know. Representative McNamara, did you have a... I guess we could adopt this first.
Okay.
See no discussion on the A8 amendment. All in favor of the A8 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The A8 amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative McNamara, is there still an issue on the were versus are issue?
No, I'm just going to let it go.
Oh, okay. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe you said the A8, and we were passed out the A9. So did you actually adopt the A8 or the A9 amendment?
The A8 amendment.
Thank you.
Yep, there is another amendment out, too, the A9 amendment. Okay, so
could I have a copy?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, could I have a copy of A8?
Okay, the it was in your packet. Everyone should have had it. It was what we were talking about before, that we started at 9 o'clock.
That was handed out.
It was handed out.
Oh, it was handed out. Excuse me. All right.
Here's the A8.
You have a copy of it, Representative Murphy?
Yes, I do now.
Oh, okay. Okay. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, you talk about an A9, and okay, I don't have a copy of the A9 amendment. And I'm just wondering, I have an A10 amendment. Is that to a different bill that we're going to be dealing with later?
I think the A10 amendment is to the House file. So, yeah, that would be to, we're dealing on the Senate file
okay.
right now.
All
right.
Right.
Yeah, so that would be a different.
He just handed me something different.
Oh. Yeah, no, I got it.
Okay. Members, okay, we have moved the Senate file, 209. We've adopted the A8 amendment. Representative Garofalo.
Representative Hackbarth has an amendment.
Representative Hackbarth has an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move the A9 amendment.
Representative Hackbarth moves the A9 amendment. Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the A9 amendment essentially is the language that the Senate passed off the Senate floor last week. And it's contained, I think everybody has it in their file, Senate file 1006. It's the language that's in that bill. And it also has what was in our original bill, the legislative findings. And that's the gist of the A9 amendment.
Discussion to the A9 amendment.
Mr. Chair, sorry, I don't have that. Was that in, that was in the packet?
No, that was just passed out.
Oh, okay. Representative Mahoney just handed it to me. Thank
okay.
you.
Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A9 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A9 amendment is adopted. Okay. I don't know of any other amendments. Any other discussion to the bill? See none. All in favor of Senate. I'm sorry, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, and to the members, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds here, but I don't like tying all this together because it is kind of what we were complaining about before. We are underneath the gun, and I'm going to recommend that we all pass this out of committee and get it to the floor because we have 6,000 people who are suffering on the Iron Range. But it's a process piece, and most people don't give a dang about process, but it is not good for us as an institution to tie these type things together because, as was said on the floor, what's the next thing we're going to tie together at some point? So just it always comes back to bite us, even though when we think we're so smart.
1812. Well, I suspect it will also get additional votes this way, too. But any other discussion to the bill as amended? Seeing none, all in favor of Senate File 209 as amended, being referred to the General Register, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senate File 209 is referred to the General Register. Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House File 2032. I'll be referred to the General Register, and we'll, Mr. Chairman, my intent is to take up the same amendments that we just took up in this bill and take the same action.
All right. Representative Garofalo moves House File 2032 be referred to the General Register. And which amendment would you like first, Representative Garofalo?
We can start with A11.
A11. Representative Garofalo moves the A11 or A11 amendment.
And Mr. Chairman, this is the again, the same subject, the exact same language as we just passed.
Okay. Let me give people a chance to get the amendment and make sure they all have it in front of them and are feeling comfortable with it.
Good to
Mr. Chairman, maybe just if you could, I guess the question might be for some why.
I'm sorry, Representative
Why this procedure?
Why are we doing both of them?
Yes.
I think so that we have both of them out in the general register ready to be acted on if they need to. I don't know if it's been determined yet if we're going to pass the House file or the Senate file. And so I guess since we've got them both before us, we thought we'd kick them both out there.
So we're, okay, I'm being watchful, if you will, for vehicles and one thing and another. You and I had a little discussion. Maybe this is a good time to bring it up about whether there was going to be a supplemental bill, a House budget resolution, or not. And so this is just to be parked out there, but it's not the vehicle for something else.
Just the tax bill.
Just the tax bill, okay.
We already
heard that the chair of taxes edit
Representative Carlson, we already passed the vehicle bill earlier today. We don't need another one.
Well, I.
It's always good to ask about
that.
That
should be getting drafted.
So you mean I'm a co-author of a potential vehicle bill, is what you're saying?
We like to do things in a bipartisan way.
Okay.
No, actually, the Senate had given me that date moving bill before, and yeah. So in cooperation, I moved it with them. I mean, I guess
that was somewhat tongue in cheek. The vehicle bill, just we are alert to that, though. But I
sure
on a serious note wanted to know why we were passing out both bills, and I think you've said you're going to take well. Which one are you going to take up then? I suppose you don't know yet.
I think we don't know yet. Is the question. Okay.
But they'll
Mr.
both
Chairman,
be parked.
I can clarify on that.
Representative Garofalo, can you enlighten us?
I can state definitively I don't know which one we're taking. I don't think it. I know I don't know. So,
all right. Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Garofalo, does House File 2032 have a Senate companion, and who's the author?
We're going through it a second time.
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I do not know if there is a Senate companion, and I do not know who the author is.
Thank you.
Representative Hillstrom?
That was the question here.
Okay. All right. The A11 amendment then has been moved. I think everyone's got it. Seen no questions on it. All in favor of the A11 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A11 amendment is adopted. And we have the A10 amendment in front of us. Representative Garofalo moves the A10 amendment. Representative Garofalo, this is the identical to the A8 amendment. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is my understanding.
All right. Any discussion to the A10 amendment to House File 2032? See no discussion. All in favor of the A10 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A10 amendment is adopted. I see no other amendments. Discussion to House File 2032 as amended. See no discussion. All in favor of House File 2032 as amended being referred to the General Register, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 2032 as amended is referred to the General Register. I did say that, didn't I? As amended.
You said it as amended.
All right. Members, I don't know of any other business to come before the committee today. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, alluding to the discussion we had, has there been any determination over the weekend or since last Thursday whether there's going to be a House budget resolution or the possible use of House Rule 4.05? Okay. Do you know what direction you're going to go?
Members, no, Representative Carlson, there's been no decision on that. I actually don't anticipate we'll have a decision for some time. Members, what Representative Carlson is talking about is he talked to me on Thursday, I believe it was, about whether we were going to adopt targets this year versus using House File or House Rule 4.05, which basically just says when a bill gets to the floor in an even numbered year, the amount that it gets to the floor at is its target. Both those rules have been used in past years, and I guess I haven't made a decision yet myself on which way I think we should go. We haven't really had discussion about that in our caucus. I guess if you have preferences that you'd like to convey, I'm happy to hear them. The third deadline, of course, isn't until, I think it's April 21st, so we've got a little while here still, but no decision has been made.
I'm not going to share a preference with the chairman at this point, other than to say that maybe we can have that discussion later. But I think it's important at some point people know what whether we're going to have a House budget resolution or whether we're going to go with 4.05. I guess I have some thoughts either way. It's been some time since we used 4.05. But it has been used, so maybe
my understanding was
maybe we could explain a little bit.
Session,
you know, maybe we could explain or have staff explain what the you did give a brief description, but there are certain things you can do under 4.05 on the revenue side, but you can't expend the money, I think is my understanding of it. So you could raise revenue, but you couldn't spend it because it would be a violation of the bottom line. Is that a correct
Mr. Marks, could I call on you to make a comment on that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, House budget resolution deals with net targets for each committee, and net targets are generally looked at as the net effect on the fund, usually the general fund. So a bill that might spend $101 million and raise $1 million in fees or taxes or whatever is general fund revenue, the net impact would be $100 million. And Rule 4.03 or the budget resolution limits that. Rule 4.05 keys off expenditures or spending. So it limits spending. It doesn't deal with revenue. And it limits spending by fund and it limits actually future years as well as the current biennium or year. So it's as you characterize it, you could raise revenue. An amendment would not be out of order if it raised revenue. It would be out of order, though, if it attempted to spend that revenue and spending it put it over the amount that was spent in the bill as it came to the floor. 4.05 also, it's not only general fund, it limits any fund, and it's spending in any fund by fund.
Yeah, and Mr. Representative Carlson, Chairman, the reason I mentioned that rule earlier today, and I had a question just exactly how that would work, and I explained it the way I just did, but I think it would be helpful or was helpful for the group to understand the difference between the budget resolution and 4.05. Thank you.
Any other questions before we adjourn the meeting?
Visitors, you and did you?
Visitors?
I wonder if they were waiting to be put the page there announced or anything.
Oh, we do have a group of pages here, it looks like.
Oh.
Where are you from?
All over.
Oh, okay, this is the high school page program. Why don't you just tell us your name and where you're from, starting on maybe this side here. Great. Well, welcome. We will probably see you otherwise around, and we hope you enjoy your time here. Seeing no other business before the committee is adjourned.